If you turn to the 15th division of the Gospel according to Luke, you'll find a story there that is perhaps the most tender and the most loving story that Jesus ever told. It's the story of the lost son, and it has sometimes been called the pearl of all the parables of Jesus. And as I read that story and as I think about the events of that story, I see in that story, by an eye of faith, a young man calling out to his father. And he calls out to his father and he tells him that he wants to talk to him. Well, as a father, I can see the sparkle, the anticipation in the eyes of that father as he waits to talk to his son. Like most young men and their fathers, at this point in their life cycle, their relationship is probably a bit strained. You see, there comes a time in the life of every young man that conversations with their father are more and more infrequent, if not altogether non-existent. About 13, you see, for a young man at about 13, dad starts to get a little bit dumb. And as the years go by, dad just gets dumber and dumber and dumber. And by the time that boy is 18, dad is such a moron that it's amazing that he can even dress himself without help. About 25, the process begins to reverse itself, and those young boys start to become human again. And at about age 40, the process is complete, and that young boy that thought you were such an idiot at 13, by the time he's about 40, realizes, you know, maybe dad knew some stuff after all. And so when this young man says to his father that he wants to talk to him, I can imagine that this father, being human, is looking forward with eager anticipation to that conversation. He's grateful for any opportunity for he and his son to talk. And yet the very next words out of that son's mouth dash any hopes for a meaningful conversation. Because that's when the young man says to his father that he doesn't want to wait around for him to die. He says he wants his inheritance now without waiting for his father to die. I can almost see and I can almost hear the defiance in that young man's voice as he would say to his father, I want you to give me my inheritance now. And I see a father staggered by the insolence of his son. I see a father unwilling to challenge this incorrigible young man. So numbly, the father goes to where he keeps his money and he retrieves it and he hands the son his portion. Oh my, how desperately he wanted to caution him. How desperately he wanted to warn him not to squander his inheritance. And yet the father knows that that would be just so much noise, and there's no need for him to waste his breath. He knew the boy would give him that look. And ignore his warnings. And so the father said nothing. Can you, at this very hour, can you see the sadness in that father's eyes? As he stood on the porch of the family home and watched that young boy walk down the road. Can you see the tears that welled up? As he watches the boy until he's out of his sight. A child he had held within minutes of his birth. A child he had cherished from the moment of that birth on. And he watches him as he disappears down that road. He doesn't even give a backward glance as he leaves his father in the family home. Well, as you can imagine, it didn't take long for the stories of the young man's exploits to reach home. And as he heard of his escapades and his apparent indulgences in pleasure and happiness, it grieved the father even more. But the boy had his inheritance and he was having the time of his life. A pocket full of money was buying him all the happiness that he could ever want for. He found himself surrounded by the kind of fast-moving friends that he had always wanted. No more sleepy farmers and dull herdsmen to hang out with. No more plain and simple female neighbors. He was enjoying the fast life, and the fast life was even better than he had imagined it was going to be. And then, without warning, a great tragedy struck this young man. He reached his hand into his money pouch, and his fingers touched the bottom. It was empty. And he couldn't believe how quickly his money had vanished. And now he wondered what he was going to do. He had no skills for a meaningful, worthwhile trade or occupation. And not only that, he watched all of his newfound friends just disappear and vanish into thin air. He was desperate for money. And in his desperation, he responded to the news that a local pig farmer had an opening for a hired hand. So this lonely, hopeless, forlorn boy landed a job slopping hogs. Can you visualize that with your sanctified imagination? He's left home with a pouch full of money. And now day after day, his spirits are sinking. And then one day, suddenly, a light came on in his brain. And he came to his senses and he asked himself, "What am I doing here?" And he asked it as if he thought the swine might have an answer for him. But his thoughts turned to home. His thoughts turned to the father that he had walked away from. And he realized something. He realized that his father had hired servants that lived better than he did. And he began to think that if he were working for his father, he would be able to eat better than this. And through all of this thought process, those pigs never even looked up from their breakfast. But the young man resolved he would go home to his father and offer to be one of his servants. Can you imagine the anguish in his heart as he wondered? As he wondered if his father would even let him come home. As he wondered if his father would even let him come back, would even have him. By an eye of faith, I see the father one afternoon. Sitting in the front room of the family home, staring out a window, looking down that long road. The same road he'd seen his son walk down when he left home. And off in the distance, he sees something that surprises him. A tiny figure advancing down the road on the horizon. And as the figure comes closer, the father's eyes squinted. And he wondered, could it be? Certainly not. But it looks like. Well, it might be. The young man's gait was noticeably slower. His shoulders were stooped. But as the father looked out that window, there was no doubt. It was his boy. He was home. Without hesitation, the father opens the door and runs down the road toward his son. Can you see him? Can you see the father as he runs toward that son, his robes blowing in the wind, his arms outstretched? And the young man sees his father running toward him and his knees buckle. And he goes to the ground. What punishment is my father going to extract? Am I going to get whipped? Am I going to be placed in exile? And the boy knows. His only hope and chance for survival is nothing but pure contrition. And as the father reaches the son says, "Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned against you. I don't deserve to be." And the father wasn't even listening. He told the servants, "Kill the fatted calf. Put a ring on the boy's finger. Put a robe on his back." And I can almost see that father as he opened his arms and as he hugged that son close to him and he embraced him. I could see him as he takes his face and he holds his face between his hands and he's grinning. And he's grinning until his son grinned back at him. I can hear him shouting. The neighbors hear him shouting. The servants hear him shouting. "We're going to have a celebration. We're having a homecoming feast. We're going to have a family reunion. My son that was lost has come home and he's been found." Have you ever thought about that story? Why did he do it? Why did that young man go out into the far country? It wasn't because he got up on the wrong side of the bed one morning. He didn't come to this desperate conclusion that he would go out and see just how big a mess he could make of his life one day. The young man was not a monstrosity. He was not in the least bit abnormal. If you actually read the story of the lost son, you'll realize that the boy in that story was a whole lot like you. And a whole lot like me. He was no more eager to wreck himself and wreck his life than you and I are. He wasn't planning on landing in the hog pen by the swill trough. And he didn't go into the far country because he wanted to see if he could cause his father pain. He had no desire to spite his father or anybody else. He probably actually regretted that his father took his going away so much to heart. Actually, if you want to know the truth, he probably thought his father was a sentimental old fool for carrying on so about him leaving. But the boy was not so vicious that he wanted to deliberately hurt the kindly old man. He had no desire to turn his hair gray before his time. He didn't want to see his father wet his pillow with tears night after night after night. So why did he leave? Are you listening? He went away because he was seeking to please himself and only himself. He thought he would be more free in the big world beyond home. And he thought this larger freedom would bring him greater joy and bring him a better time and a more enjoyable life. He was simply bent on living his own life his own way, like so many people still are. And he was so intent on pleasing himself that he had no thought for any loss or any pain that he might cause to himself or to anyone else. Of course he wounded his father. And he wounded his father deeply. But that was not part of his purpose. All this young man was trying to do was to just see life unhampered in any way by the restraints that home authority might put upon him. Self-pleasing. The desire to please self. That is the very essence of sin. Jesus said, if you and I are going to follow after him, we must be willing to deny self. Selfishness, self-pleasing is expensive. That man or that woman today who is determined to please self is doomed to pay a terrible price. And yet the individual is not the only one that pays. If the desire to please self is my God, it will hurt me. It will also hurt others. Write this down. It's on the final exam. No one on the top side of God's green earth ever sinned without wounding someone else in the process. The desire to please self cost this boy the fellowship of his father, and it cost him the joys of home. The moment that self-will becomes the goal of any soul is the moment that soul breaks with God and loses all sense of God's fellowship, and the soul becomes a homeless wanderer. To go away from God is to always go away from the heart's true home. Until you and I can say and sing with the psalmist, Lord, thou hast been my dwelling place in all generations. Until we can say and sing that with the psalmist, there is nothing but disappointment and homesickness in store for any of us. Self-pleasing, this desire to please self, it cost this son his freedom. And that's a tragic irony, because it was his freedom that he went out in search of. Because in this hour of self-will, he looked at his father and he says, give me. Give me. And when his heart was broken, he came back to the father and he said, make me. Give me my part of the inheritance. Make me as one of your hired servants. My friends, there's as much difference in those two requests as there is between death and life. When he says to the Father, give me, he means I must be free. I must do as I please. And the road by which he sought to go to freedom was a road that brought him into slavery. And he joined the citizen of that country, and that citizen he joined himself to sent him to the fields to feed swine. Did you catch that in the story when you've read it? He sent him. That's the word. When he sent that boy to the field to feed, to slop the hogs, the boy's will was not consulted. It was the will of somebody else. He didn't go. He was sent. Beloved, that is an old and constantly repeated story. Do you remember Samson of the Old Testament? Samson of the Old Testament decided he would take a fling at freedom himself, and he went down for a holiday in Gaza. And the outcome was fetters of brass and slavish grinding away in the prison house. That's what Samson got. The desire to please self cost this boy the doing of a mean and sordid task. He was sent to the fields to feed the swine. And you think about the humiliation involved in that for a young Jewish boy. Can you think of a more pathetic way for that boy to use his life? And we understand it. We understand the full tragedy of it in the light of the fine things that this boy might have been able to do. For this young Jewish lad to be slopping the hogs is bad enough. But to be there slopping the hogs when it was his right to be at home in the Father's house is even worse. The terrible, horrible, awful truth about self-will is that it not only sets us to tasks that are sordid and worthless, but it robs us of the joy of putting our hands to tasks that are worthwhile. The desire to please self actually cost this young man everything. The story says that he spent all that he had. He became a moral and spiritual pauper. He became morally and spiritually bankrupt. He ended up with an empty heart, a gnawing agony in the pit of his stomach that made him cry, "I perish with hunger." But the story tells us he came back to himself. And when it says he came to himself, that tells us that when he was doing all of those wild and foolish things, he was not at himself. You see, self-will, selfishness, the desire to please self is moral insanity. And so coming to himself means that not only did he recover his sanity, but having done so, he dared to face the facts about himself. He did something that's always a wise thing to do. He looked the truth squarely in the face. He realized he was perishing with hunger. He realized that he was starving to death. And he also realized he was doing so needlessly. He realized that his father's servants had bread enough and to spare. And having come to himself, he came to a decision. He said, I will arise and reform. No. Read the story. That's not what he said. Reformation is good, but that's not enough. He said, I resolve to go to the Father. You and I will never stop. He will never stop till we come face to face with God. He said, he didn't say I'll reform. He said, I will arise and I will go to the Father. Who is he? Who is this lost son? Who is this prodigal as he has come to be known? He is that poor soul who has flung away from his father and wasted his substance with riotous living. But he's not the only one. Every individual is in the truest sense of the word a prodigal who is living outside the will of God. Everyone who is not living God's kind of life. And the wisest thing that any man or woman on the footstool of God ever does is to turn their wayward steps toward God. And the sooner we do it, the better. Would you do that? Would you make the high resolve of this lost son? Would you resolve to go to the Father? Perhaps this morning you have never actually started to live within the will of God. I would ask you to, in simple trusting faith, repenting of everything that's sin in your life, confessing the name of Jesus Christ, be buried in the waters of baptism, and begin today to live your life within the will of God. Maybe you did that once upon a time. Maybe once upon a time you were living within the will of God. Maybe once upon a time you became a Christian. But you've, over the years, had a greater desire to live life your way than to live life God's way. Oh, maybe you haven't done the really bad stuff. Most folks haven't. You know, you haven't murdered anybody. You haven't robbed a liquor store lately or shot the clerk in a convenience store or any of those kind of things. But the love of Jesus has been missing from your life. Selfishness has been apparent. And your neglect of the Lord has been obvious to others. If you need to start living your life within the will of God, I'd beg you to come and let us help you do that. I can't do it for you. If I would, I could. Because I love your soul just that much. But I can't. Like the son in our story, you've got to make the decision on your own to live your life within the will of God. But like the father in our story, God stands ready to welcome us home. He'll open his arms wide and welcome us with loving and open arms, but it's up to us to turn our faces toward him. I'm finished. The invitation is the invitation of the Lord Jesus Christ. The decisions to make are yours as we stand and while we sing.